Hello and welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. We are, of course, sponsored by the North Jersey Vipers Softball Club. Softball's in full swing, everyone. And now, the North Jersey Vipers are in their 14th season. They are the longest-running softball club in North Jersey. They have a proven track record for getting players to the next level. They currently have 21 alumni playing NCAA softball. Get in touch with my man, Bob Germano, the owner and manager of the club at NorthJerseyVipers.com. All right, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. The postseason is upon us. It's go time. Win or go home for many of our teams in the Tri-State. Conference tournaments are in full swing, and coming up on this show, we'll talk with Quinnipiac head coach Tom Pecora. He is now 66 and going strong, having the time of his life. Pecora was just named MAC Coach of the Year. What a job he's done in Hamden. They have won the MAC. 15 regular season wins, the most ever in conference play for QU. The MAC tournament will be played later this week in Atlantic City at Boardwalk Hall. And he has some players, including Matt Belonk, who was named MAC Player of the Year. So they get the Coach of the Year. They get the Player of the Year. We will talk to Tom Pecora coming up in just a couple of minutes. Plus, we'll preview the Big East tournament. I will break down St. John's and Seton Hall. Could we have had a better first-round matchup? I mean, you have UConn, the number one team in the Big East, the defending national champs at noon, followed by Seton Hall and St. John's. That afternoon session is going to be buzzing. What a matchup. I will go over the key matchups in this game, the X factors, and review what happened, what went well and wrong for both teams during the regular season. Plus, I'll also give you my thoughts on the Ivy League madness, hoping for a Princeton-Yale matchup and a guaranteed Tri-State team in the NCAA tournament. The Ivy League Madness gets going on Saturday with the semifinals and then Sunday with the championship game. All those games being played at Columbia this year. But first, let's talk with Tom Pecora. I recorded this interview with him just prior to the announcement that he had won Coach of the Year in the MAC. So that was not discussed. But listen, it was a great conversation. I enjoyed every minute of it. We covered just about everything else. And here it is. My guest this episode is no stranger to the Tri-State. He grew up in Queens Village, graduated from Adelphi University. He's been a head coach at Hofstra, Fordham, and now Quinnipiac, where he just guided the Bobcats to their first ever MAC regular season title, winning 15 games in league play. That is their most ever in the MAC conference. It is my pleasure to welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, Tom Pecora. Coach, congratulations. Great to talk with you.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
All right, Coach. So let's start with that win, your last regular season win. You went into the last game on Saturday, and you needed a win at St. Peter's to clinch the outright title. A lot on the stake for St. Peter's as well. That was a heck of a win against a very tough and gritty team.
It was a heck of a game. I mean, a mid-major game played at a very, very high level. You know, every possession was a battle. It's what we anticipated. You know, they're doing a great job at St. Peter's. They compete on such a high level. I mean, if you don't bring your A game every night when you step against on the court against them, you're going to be challenged. Very physical game, tough game to officiate. But I thought that the crew did a good job with it, and I think we were very resilient. You know, after taking the lead, they got it down to five a couple times. We extended to double digits. They battled back, get it to five again. So, you know, we did bend, but we never broke, and I was very proud of the effort our guys gave us.
How important is it in a game like that where you establish a lead, you know they're going to make a run, and you kind of keep them at arm's distance and, you know, never get them the opportunity to have the ball to tie or take the lead?
Yeah, well, it's very important. And a lot of that has to do with, as a coach, you're always concerned about your depth. We have great depth, and we had the ability to put some guys in off the bench and not miss a beat, you know, because you get the game was played at such a high level from a point of intensity and physicality that you had to give your starters a little bit of a blow. And I think that became an advantage for us, that our bench really stepped up and we didn't lose any leads while our sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth men were in the game. And that was important for us.
So you're the highest scoring team in the MAC, and they're one of the best defensive teams, them and Marist. You score 89 points in this game. Typically, these games kind of go toward the defense. How were you able to impose your will against them?
Well, I think it had a lot to do with our defense. You know, we were able to, you know, everyone wants to score points, but you're not going to score a bunch of buckets if you're taking the ball out of the net. You know, you got to get stops. You got to really focus on your ability to defend and rebound. And I thought we did a great job ourselves in that regard. And that allowed us to get out and go and transition and obviously attack them when they weren't quite as organized defensively. Because once there's a dead ball or a made basket on their part and you're coming up and they're organizing what they want to do, and they throw multiple defenses at you, various variations of their man-to-man, but then also like a flat 1-3-1 that you don't see a lot of. And they threw a little 2-3 at us. So, I mean, you know, you have to come down. It's a little more of a challenge, but if you can get out and transition, and we have a lot of shooters on the floor so we can create space, it gives us a huge advantage. So, you know, we focus on defending and rebounding every day.
How about your backcourt? They get so much, press with Belonk and Matt Belonk, the second leading scorer in the MAC, I must say. And he had 25 points in this game. And Savion Lewis, boy, coach, I mean, you know, you talk about a floor general, averages over 7 assists a game, 5th in the nation. What have they meant to your team this year?
Well, they've been incredible, both on and off the floor. They're two of our three captains, along with Paulo Tiano. And, you know, they walk the walk, man. You know, there's a lot of guys that want to talk about, let's be great, let's do this. But they're the first guys in the gym. They're the last guys to leave. They handle their business on and off the floor, academically, in the training room, and, you know, just in the way they go about their life during the course of a basketball season. And that sets such a great example when you have three captains like that. The trickle-down effect to a large number of the guys is so important, because they see that veterans, this is how you get successful. This is how you become successful on this level. And the other thing that I just had a great discussion with one of my mentors, Bob McKillop, about this last week, is they're not afraid to go talk to their teammates. You know, it's not just leading by example. They're willing to, the three of them will come over to a locker and say, hey, my man, you got to have a better practice than you did today. Like, it's important. You may only, you know, you may be near the end of the bench, but if you're not bringing it every day, you're not making us a better team. We all have our jobs here. So I love that they're willing to do that. And they're not over the top with it, but they are willing to go speak to their teammates. And I think, once again, I'm a dinosaur, man, but that's generational. You know, 100 years ago, guys would grab each other in the locker room and give them a shake if some young kid wasn't doing their job. So now you have to do it in the right way, but they're willing to do that. And that's part of great leadership.
You know, and they're an extension of you, right, coach? And in this day and age, with the transfer portal, guys leaving, looking for other opportunities, to have guys that have stayed with the program, and you've been here, you know, you've been here since 2017, so you know all these guys, to have them there knowing the system, knowing what you expect, and having, you know, 22, 23-year-old men out there, you know, helping you, how important is that?
Well, it's very, very important. You know, this whole thing has evolved into what it is today, whether you're pro or anti, you know, NIL and transfer, immediate transfers. What concerns me is graduation rates. I think once we get out of this cycle of everyone getting that COVID year,
yeah,
and now all of a sudden young guys are transferring all over the place, and the chances of you transferring all your credits are slim. And I think we're going to just have a huge drop in graduation rates, because guys are going to play 4 years. They won't finish their degrees. They're going to want to go play on the next level, whether it be in Europe or here in the States. And I think that that's going to be a shame. But in that regard, you know, it used to be different. I remember years ago, we would, especially with our front court guys, we would love to take them and from high school, send them to prep school, have them go up see Jerry Quinn for a year at St. Thomas More, a good buddy of mine. We grew up together, and then come back and then sometimes redshirt them as a freshman. Mm-hmm. And now when they were seniors, they were 23, 24-year-old seniors. But you weren't worried about them transferring all over the place. But you think about being an 18-year-old freshman and you're going head-to-head with a 23-24-year-old guy in the baseline of a college basketball game, the physicality of it, the experience that they have. So now it's just kind of, I go back to my roots as a junior college coach. I kid about it, and I say, we're going to have them for 2 years, either on the front end or the back end, probably moving forward from now on, because if they come in and they have a great 2 years, we're like AAA baseball. You know, right. Every major conference in the country has got every team in every major conference has got a guy on their staff, and they're just looking. And today our all MAC conference teams will come out. All of the other team conferences come out, and they have someone watching it, and they're pulling up film on synergy, and they're forwarding it to the coaches, and they're saying, this guy can fit into our system. And they're going to just try to come in and throw money at our guys. And not just us. I mean, every mid-major team in the country is dealing with this.
So at what point, let's talk about that a little bit, Coach. At what point do you start to re-recruit your guys to know if they're staying or going while you're still trying to get to the NCAA tournament, right, and prepare your team for the MAC tournament coming up this week?
Right. Well, look, I think the way you treat a student athlete from the day you start recruiting him to the day he leaves campus, whether he graduates or moves on, you're re-recruiting him. You know, and we talk all the time about our honesty with them. You know, we'll be straight up with them in every aspect of their life, whether it's on the floor academically or if there's a social issue. So I think it's about the relationship. But we're also not naive to the fact that, you know, if there's an opportunity there for you to take care of your family financially, it's really challenging to say no. And I mean, I'm recruiting young men now out of high school, and I'm talking to them about every spring, you'll come in here and me, you and your family will decide what's best for you. And if it's best for you and your family to move on, because there's a financial opportunity there for you that's just outlandish and it can really change your life, I'm going to hug you, love you up, and send you on your way. And that's just the way of the world right now. But I think this is a special place with that said. And I think, you know, the way the guys are treated here, whether it's, you know, they have single rooms, king size beds, three guys in a suite with a living room. You know, the days of four guys and two bunk beds and an 8x10, those are long gone in college basketball on this level and higher levels. You know, so we try to do all those things that we can to make life comfortable here for them. And then it's about relationships as well, their relationships with the coaching staff, their relationships with their teammates and the faculty here in the administration. So it's a special place here. I think we're going to be able to weather the storm in that regard. We will lose some guys on occasion, but when we do, we'll be able to go out and find young men and to take a look at this place. And we've been very lucky with the guys we've gotten to commit early and sign early. And I think it's a great place. So we're going to get players here.
Hey, Coach, you know, you've been at this a long time. You've had a lot of successes. An assistant, and you know, you and Jay Wright through Villanova together, and then you had very good success at Hofstra. I know things didn't work out for you at Fordham the way you wanted to, but you've had a long, very successful career. You built a lot of relationships. So how much joy are you having again being a head coach, right? This is your first full season as a head coach again, and how enjoyable has this been for you?
No, it's been tremendous. You know, it's a tough business, man. Young kids come in and they all see game night. You know, they watch a game on television. They see you come out and coach a game. And they're like, oh, what a cool thing. I'd like to do that. But they don't see, you know, not being home for your children's birthdays because you're away on the road recruiting. They don't see the amount of hours, your 60, 70 hour weeks you're spending. Yeah. So I try to paint that picture to young people when they want to get into this business. And now when you look at the instability of all of this because of the NIL and the transfer portal, it makes it even more of a challenging job. But, you know, look, it's been 40 years, man, and I've been blessed. Wow. You know, my first job out of college, I worked for Bob McKillop, who's legendary and will be a Hall of Fame coach. Bob was at Long Island Lutheran High School, and I was getting out of Adelphi. My college roommate, John Corso, was a great player for Bob at Holy Trinity High School when he was there. And he got us connected through summer camps, and I started working for Bobby, and I learned from him. And after that, he got me a job as a it's an interesting story. I was teaching in Garden City, Long Island, and I was a health and phys ed teacher, and the JV basketball job opened, and I went and I interviewed with the head coach there, who will remain nameless, and he didn't give me the job. And I was ready to get the JV job and just wait till he moved on. And then I said, hey, this will be a great quality of life. It's a beautiful community on Long Island. I'll be a health and phys ed teacher forever. So I don't get the job. So a week later, Bob McKillop calls and says, you know, Stu Klein at Nassau Community College is a friend of mine, and he needs an assistant. If you want to take the next step and just be a college assistant, it's a part-time job. I'm still teaching, you know, health and physical education. And I go meet with Stu Klein, and the quickest interview in the history of interviews. He's just, God bless him, he just passed last year, and I think of him every day. But he sat down and he looked at my resume, and he said, you got out of Van Buren High School in 76? I said, yeah. He said, I got out in 64. You got the job. And that was it. And we became lifelong friends, and just he and his family. I still stay in touch with his lovely wife, Esther. And it's just, you know, and you just move on from things. I became a JUCO head coach at 28, and I made a lot of mistakes, man. You know, I learned how to coach in front of 50 people. You know, 100 right. people at the JUCO games. And, you know, and
hey, coach, did they know more than you knew then? Were the fans still
push,
the same?
Man. It was a push. I'll tell you, I had some great point guards. I had a point guard. I remember Derek Cooper, who played at Abraham Lincoln High School for legendary high school coach Bobby Hartstein, who I just was texting with last week. He's down in Florida. But I remember we were in a timeout, a close game, and very respectful, didn't say anything. And then when I got done, Derek Cooper just put his finger up. He says, coach, you want me to give a foul on this guy if he catches and he's shooting like 50% of the foul? Like he was thinking the game, right. two plays ahead of me. And it was awesome. But that was a great experience to learn and make mistakes and organize a team and run practices and do all of those things. And from there, I went and worked for Roland Massimino. And, you know, life-changing chance he took on me, giving me the opportunity when they left Villanova and they went to UNLV, they had never recruited junior college kids for the most part at Nova. And Jay and I were very close. We had worked camps together, both when we were coming out of college and getting into coaching business, and we became fast friends. And I got the opportunity to go work for Coach Mass. And one of the greatest things about him was he taught you every aspect of the business. You know, he wasn't a coach that went out and just said, go on the road, recruit. You know, you were in practice, you were watching things, you were breaking down film with him. He was talking to you about the business end of coaching and like a second father to me. And he was just incredible. I did a quick year at Loyola Marymount from there with John Olive. Came back to the East Coast when Jay got the Hofstra job. I was a New Yorker, you know, born and bred in the five boroughs and knew everyone in there for recruiting in Long Island. Having gone to Adelphi, so I came back with Jay and I was his assistant for 7 years. And then I had got my opportunity to cut my teeth there for a 9-year run there, you know. So, yeah, what a long, strange trip it's been. But to do it now, you know, at 65 years old, get the opportunity to come here and take over and take over the first seat again. And it's really been an incredible experience. Wonderful staff. I was able to keep the guys on that were here. And you know, it takes a village, man, you know, and to have the support of an athletic director, the entire athletic department, and from the president on down, Dr. Olean, they've all been so supportive of this process, and good things have happened to this point. Now we got to finish the play, man. You know, we talk about finishing all the time. I keep telling the guys they got work to do. You know, we do 20 minutes of shooting drills before official practice starts each day, and the assistants are out there. And usually the team, they got their music going, you know.
Mm-hmm. But what's your music, coach?
Well, last week I started playing the Isley Brothers' Work to Do, and now we're playing until this postseason's over. So I keep telling them we still got work to do. So the other night at St. Peter's, we celebrated a little bit, but we didn't blow it all out because I said, once again, we got a lot to do yet. Let's stay focused and mature about the way we move forward with what we're doing.
Hey, I get that. You know, enjoy it for a little bit, but. And you still, the goal, especially in a one-bid conference, is to win the conference tournament. But, you know, hey, congratulations on this MAC regular season title. The last time Quinnipiac hung a banner, you were in the Northeast Conference. So there's something to applaud there, too, Coach.
Oh, very much so. And look, we're going to wear it, man. You know, I think we're very proud of what we did. And having done this so long, mid-major tournaments, you know, it's Russian roulette, man. You know, I had a team at Hofstra. We won 26 games, and, you know, we got shut out of the tournament. I'm still bitter about it. You know, I mean, and there's politics involved at times with that. And as we all know, the Selection Sunday is going to be, especially now in the world we live in, these mid-major teams, you know, trying to get at-large mid-major bids. You see poor Indiana State loses the other day. The kind of season they had, for them to not to get the chance to go play in the NCAA tournament, that would be criminal. But it might just happen because they'll gobble up the sixth or seventh team in a major conference. And I think that that's challenging. I think, you know, there's a lot of people that are just trying to do whatever they need to do to survive in the environment we live in now in college basketball, and the power conferences have all the juice.
Yeah, and how about the Ivy League? I mean, you played Yale, you know what they're like. Imagine you can't tell me that Yale and Princeton, Cornell, you know, you can't get two teams from that league, but they're not going to, unfortunately.
Now, look, when I was coaching at Fordham, you talk about bad timing. You know, I kid around. I said, you know, we were getting 5 and 6 bids, the A-10, every year then. And I mean, we were battling. So we're playing a conference tournament team every other night when you're trying to build a program, you know, up from zero. You know,
Right.
we were like 340 or something in the RPI when I took the job. So, and we were a year away from turning the corner, but they made a business decision. And life goes on. So, you know, I got baptized by blood. I've never been fired from any job, from being a paper boy through my entire life, you know. And then at that age, to get clipped, it was an interesting life experience, to say the least.
It shapes your coach, but hey, everything in life, right? What you can make up, but you can talk about any cliches. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and life
Right.
happens for a reason. So now you're here at Quinnipiac, really enjoying it. I want to talk about the season that you had because, hey, you know, you start out losing at Canisius in your first MAC game. You lose by 20. It's a brutal trip up there to Western New York. Then you come back, big overtime win against Niagara. That catapults you to an 11-game winning streak in conference play. Then you lose four straight. What happened that suddenly, you know, things didn't go your way? And how were you able to turn it around and in turn win four straight?
Yeah, well, look, first off, this conference, like we're going to go into this conference tournament. There's 9 teams that could win this tournament. I mean, this the level of competition. When we went on that winning streak, we were winning 1 and 2 possession games. It wasn't like we were steamrolling people, you know. So sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, you know. But one of the things you mentioned earlier is Savion Lewis, Matt Belong, veteran backcourt. Any team I've had that's had great seasons, you need a veteran backcourt because they've been through the battles. They understand how to control the game. You know, college basketball is about backcourt play. So we were able to do that. And then when we went on the 4-game skid, you know, tough turnaround. We played here, and then we had to get down to Mount St. Mary. So a long Friday bus ride. We were a little gassed, but they're really good at home. He's a hell of a coach. They jumped us, and it was a close game until about the 6-minute mark, and then they went on a run and got separation at the end, so it became a double-digit loss. We came back, we played Fairfield here in another high-level, great game, tie game with 2 minutes to go. You know, so that was one of the losses in the middle of that 4-point loss in the middle of that streak to the team that was battling with us for first place. But I think one of the things that we never did was lose our confidence and our swagger. I told them I still believed in them. And you know, you're going to have those little stumbles during the course of a season because it's a marathon. You know, very few teams go and have those 2 or 3 loss seasons, you know, in the course of it. But you get back to our cliches we talk all the time about, it's not what happens to you in your life, it's how you handle it. And how do we handle our losses? And the one thing I will say about this group, I mean, today is gonna our 89th practice when I get on the floor with these guys today. And I'm telling you, we haven't had a handful of bad ones. So even during that stretch, they were coming out, they were busting their tails, they were working hard every day. They weren't practicing like a losing team. They were practicing like a team that had just won 10 in a row. And that's when I knew we were going to be okay. And I talked to our staff about it. I told these guys, you know, drink a cream soda, relax, it's going to be all right.
Wait, was that a Midnight Run reference,
It
coach?
was a midnight.
Relax, relax, have a cream soda.
Just trust the old guy on this one. We're going to come back and they're going to keep competing and they're going to get ready. And they've done that and they've done a wonderful job with it. So, but You know, it's college basketball, man. It's any sport, and it's anything in life. I mean, some of these guys are going to go out in the real world and be sales reps for companies, and you're going to have great months, and you're going to have bad quarters, and it's all about how you respond, man. So just, I quote, I don't even know the woman's name, but she was one. My oldest daughter, Amanda, when she was in kindergarten or first grade, came home, and I guess she was playing in recess and fell and cut her like elbow. And she said, "Daddy, when I cut my elbow and they put a Band-Aid on it, I was still crying." And the teacher said, "Toughen up, buttercup." And to this day, every now and then, I'll throw one of those at one of these guys, and they get my point. Like, come on, man, you're a big badass college basketball player. You know, let's get up and keep playing here. So it's all good here at Quinnipiac.
Coach, I'm telling you, we're talking here, and you're really enjoying life. You're really being being a mentor to these young men and teaching them life lessons. But I know you want to win, and you want to win in the worst way and get to that NCAA tournament. So as you look at the teams that you're going to play, how are you preparing to face the winner of Mount St. Mary's and Canisius in the 8-9 game? Let's face it, Coach. You have five losses this year, and you've lost to both of those teams. So you have a challenge.
Every night we do, and good to look. You talk about two real good coaches who are going to prepare their teams, and they're going to throw a few wrinkles in just like we will. So you'll see some new stuff that you're going to have to adjust to on the fly come tournament time. You know, a team that hasn't played a 1-3-1 all year is going to come out after a timeout. They're going to jump you with it. You have to be prepared for things of that nature and certain different wrinkles in the way that they might press you, or they're boxing one and you'll see triangles in two, and all it's March Madness. You know, that's what goes on at this time of the year. So you really have to have a team that's not going to overreact to those things and have a game plan going into it. And that's something we'll work on the next couple of days. And we started to actually last week in our practices with some of those type things. So, two good teams, once again, driven by all conference level players. And then after that, we're going to get, if we're able to win that first round game on Wednesday, we'll end up back in a street fight with either Rider or St. Peter's, which will be hand-to-hand combat. And nothing's given to you, man. You got to go take it. And we'll talk about that with this group in about an hour when we get on the floor.
Yeah, this conference is notorious. The regular season champion doesn't always win. Ask Rick Pitino and Iona. They don't always win. Monmouth has been the number one seed and hasn't won. So you have a bullseye on your back. What type of experience? What do you take from all of your experiences, wins and losses in conference play, conference tournament play, that you apply and tell these guys? Going into this tournament.
Well, first and foremost, like I spoke with my staff this morning about our cadence, the way we go about our game preparation does not change. You know, it doesn't change drastically. These young men are accustomed to us doing this the day before the game. This is the time we do this. This is the time we eat. You know, as coaches, I may come off like loose and easy, but we're all control freaks when it comes to that stuff, because you want them to be comfortable in their skin as we move forward to it. I'll talk to them a bit about, the kind of whistle you're probably going to get. You know, it's going to be a little more physical than it's been in the past. Expect to have to play through contact and do those things. And I think in that regard, the St. Peter's game the other day, no, we could, nothing could prepare us more for it than that, because that was like an old Big East game. That was a Georgetown St. John's game. There was a foul on every play. Every possession, we were fouling each other. And then it's a matter of you got to figure out what the whistle's going to be and how you're going to handle it, and then back off and play to a physical level that's going to be acceptable. So that's something that's important. But I think we have veterans who are going to be able to handle that, you know. And then once again, the understanding you're not going to, a team's going to go on runs. And when they do, we know how to handle that, whether it's with our timeouts or even better without having to call a timeout. And though, put something in, and when someone goes up two possessions automatically, this is what we're running, it's kind of a football mentality. I almost would like my point guards don't have a play sheet on their forearm like quarterbacks do, but they do have five or six cuts in their head that we talk about pregame, and we say these are our go-tos for this game. So there'll be a lot of things that'll come into play, and then it's the intangibles. There's somebody just drill shots all night, and there's nothing you can do about it, whether it's a team or an individual. Or is it a night when you just can't throw it in the ocean, man? And you hope that doesn't happen this time of the year, you know?
And that's where your defense, rebounding, you know, you're one of the best, I guess you lead the nation in steals, if I'm not mistaken, or you set a program record for steals. So that's where you rely on things like that.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing we've done differently is we've extended our defense a little bit. I always thought that was important with my teams, not only for jumping people early in games, but for getting yourself back in a game. You know, if you're not a comfortable pressing team, we call them blitzes. If we don't have blitz packages, Jay and I took all this football terminology. When we were in Hofstra, we used to sit in on meetings that the Jets would have because the Jets were right in our facility.
That's right, so, in Hofstra.
Yeah, Coach Carroll was there first for 1 year, but then afterwards Herm Edwards, and he would let us in the back. I'd sit in the back and just steal football terminology because it's an aggressive mindset. And for defense, I love that. So, you know, all our double teams are called blitzes, and we have blitz packages. So, you know, there's certain times we can blitz you here, we can blitz you there. And, you know, I'll do clinics, and we'll talk about, you know, blitzes dictated by personnel, by location on the floor, by time on the clock. You know, you can do all these different things and have fun with it. So, and it's that time of the year, you know, let's have some fun with this and let these guys understand it's going to be fun, you know, like enjoy the pressure of it, you know, don't be overwhelmed by it. You know, there's a ton of young guys out there to play college basketball to be dying in your shoes to play in a game environment. And the same with me as a head coach, man, I'm enjoying this so much more than I probably did when I was 40 years old and got my first head coaching job. And you're trying to work your way through things. I mean, I was still having some fun there, don't get me wrong, but now it's just a whole different head, you know, it's a different way to look at things.
Hey, Coach, I've really enjoyed our time together here, and it's been a lot of fun talking with you and picking your brain and hearing stories and you know, you sharing your life story of coaching and fatherhood with us. So thank you very much.
It's our pleasure. Thank you so much. Go Bobcats.
Go Bobcats, and we'll be following you in the MAC tournament in Atlantic City. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, that was Tom Pokora. Man, was he great. There are some great, great coaches and great interviews in the MAC conference. I've enjoyed speaking to so many different coaches this year. And look, he's had quite a career for the last 40 years. Tom Pokora has been synonymous with winning and proving what he can do in player development. Wishing him all the best this week in Atlantic City. Of course, we will be keeping a close eye on the MAC conference tournament. It's not going to be easy, right? You're talking about 5 different teams. I know he said 9 can win it, but I'm going to say 5. Quinnipiac, Fairfield, Marist, St. Peter's, and Ryder. Those are the teams that I'm really keying on right there. I mean, St. Peter's and Marist, you're talking about 2 of the best defensive teams. Latrell Reed and Corey Washington, what a backcourt at St. Peter's. Latrell Reed was named the MAC Defensive Player of the Year. 5th-year senior, captain, holdover from the St. Peter's Elite 8 team with Shaheen Holloway. They defend. They are tough. Bashir Mason has them going. And, of course, Fairfield ended up 1 game behind Quinnipiac in the standings this year. What a job by Chris Casey. All right. And did you see they just lifted the interim tag on Chris Casey on Tuesday, named him head coach? If you didn't see that announcement, check out Fairfield's men's basketball Twitter site. The athletic director made the announcement in front of the team in the locker room, and they were hooting and hollering, and they were just going crazy and dancing with head coach Chris Casey. So he is now officially the head coach, no longer interim coach at Fairfield, and they're going to be one of the favorites as well in Atlantic City. I mean, if you're talking about best backcourts in the MAC, I know there are some great backcourts, all right? Really, really good backcourts up and down. But in terms of the best 3, I'm going Fairfield at the top. Jalen Leach, first team all MAC. Caleb Field, second team all MAC. Bryson Goodine, 6th man of the year, who can start on just about any team. They are loaded in the backcourt. And when you have a backcourt like that with proven guys, you have a chance to win. Marist is another team. Our guy John Dunn, I've known Dunn from his days as an assistant at Seton Hall under Lewis Orr. You're not going to find a better guy out there. He knows how to win this tournament. St. Peter's won it all in 2011 when John Dunn was their head coach, and now he has a chance to do it with Marist. They have the best big man in the MAC with Max Allen. They have a dynamite freshman in Josh Pascarelli out of St. Francis Prep. This team can be a sleeper as the third seed. And Ryder might have the best talent in the MAC. They were the preseason favorites. Oh, don't forget, they have won 7 straight games to close out the regular season. They are the hottest team in the conference. They have dudes in the backcourt, seniors, postgraduates, Mervin James and Alan Powell. Look out for the Bronx. Now, I know Kevin Baggett has struggled. All right, he's won a lot of games in the regular season, but his teams do not fare well in the postseason. They have underachieved greatly, but they are the hottest team. Maybe this is finally their year. And you talk about great matchups. I mean, first round, Ryder and St. Peter's. This game is going to be worth watching, ladies and gentlemen. They just played an absolute slugfest of a game that was marred by fouls, ejections, flagrant fouls. The Bronx Zoo was the appropriate place for this, all right? Because this should have been a steel cage match, the way this game was played. 46 fouls, 4 players fouled out. Mervin James was ejected for a flagrant foul. I mean, and now they're going to play a week later in Atlantic City, Boardwalk Hall. How appropriate is that? Let me say that again. St. Peter's and Ryder at Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City. What comes to mind when you think of Boardwalk Hall? There's been concerts there, but there have certainly been some of the greatest boxing matches there. All right. Maybe not the best fights ever, but some memorable fights. Mike Tyson fought there against Larry Holmes. Mike Tyson beat up Michael Spinks in that infamous match when he beat Spinks in 91 seconds and Spinks just collected a paycheck. All right. He covered himself up and cowardly just went down after 91 seconds. I mean, Glass Joe could have put up a better fight against Mike Tyson. Bald Bull. You know where I'm going with that, right? Right? Piston Honda. We can keep going with Mike Tyson Nintendo. All right, seriously, Glass Joe would have put up a better fight than Michael Spinks. That fight was in Atlantic City at Boardwalk Hall. How about Arturo Gatti with his famous trilogy against Mickey Ward? 2 of those fights were at Boardwalk Hall. So how appropriate now is that part 3, Ryder St. Peter's, is at Boardwalk Hall Thursday, center stage. And the winner will most likely get Quinnipiac in the semifinals. So it's going to be fun. The MAC is always wide open. It's not often that the number one seed wins this conference. It is a one-bid league. And there is going to be a pretty good team that doesn't make it. I wouldn't be shocked if Quinnipiac or Fairfield don't win it. But I will tell you this, Quinnipiac and Fairfield are the favorites, okay? Marist is my sleeper, but don't count out Ryder. I mean, I'm all over the place. What do you expect? This is the most wide-open season in memory in the MAC Conference. So any one of 5, place your bets, and let's go in Atlantic City. All right, before I get to the Big East and Seton Hall and St. John's and UConn, I want to say this. We welcome another new sponsor to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, Mike Supa from Ward White Sotheby's Real Estate. If you're looking to purchase a home or rent a home in Monmouth County, down the Jersey Shore, Mike Supa is your man to call. He's honest, reliable, passionate. Give him a call. 201-988-2577, Ward White Sotheby's Real Estate. Let them know you heard it right here on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Tell them Brian sent you. Okay, thanks to our new sponsor. And now let's get to the main event this week, Madison Square Garden. Big East Tournament. The story this week was the all Big East teams announced. When I had recorded this podcast, they had not yet picked the coach of the year or the player of the year. I'm going to say this. Dan Hurley will likely win coach of the year. Tristan Newton is the favorite to win player of the year. Maybe it's one of those years, maybe, that Shaheen Holloway and Dan Hurley share the coach of the year, because both are certainly deserving. But I will give the slight edge to Dan Hurley. When you make history and you win 18 games, no other team in Big East history has ever done that. That's saying something. Also, let's not forget, UConn was not predicted first. They were predicted third behind Marquette and Creighton. So a little disrespect there. I would love to see Hurley and Holloway share it. A couple of former Seton Hall point guards. That would be something, okay? Shaheen Holloway deserves to win it. And in any other year, he might win it, okay? When the team is predicted ninth and they overachieve across every metric and finish top four with 13 wins, that is coach of the year material. The only other time in recent memory that I can remember is when Kevin Willard shared the award in 2016 with Jay Wright. Could we have a repeat? I'm going to say maybe, but likely not. Okay. As for the awards for the members of first team and second team, I don't think there were too many surprises there. Okay. I said it on my tweet. It is a damn shame that the Big East only does a first team and a second team. For years before they reconfigured the Big East, they had three teams, okay? And not just when they had 16 teams in the conference. This goes back. I don't know why, and I'll try to get the answer. They changed it to first and second team, and then honorable mention. What are you doing? Three players on honorable mention? I mean, forget about honorable mention. Just make it three teams. Six on the first team if you want to do that, Big East. Five on the second and five on the third. All right? When you have Donovan Klingon and Josh Aduro on honorable mention along with Quincy Oliveri, I don't have a problem with that. But Cam Jones deserves a spot on this team somewhere. Dre Davis deserves a spot on this team somewhere. Alex Caravan deserves a spot. There were some damn good players who were stars for their teams who didn't even make first, second, or honorable mention. And this may not be like this every year, but this is one of those years. I said it in a tweet. The deepest all Big East teams since 2003. All right, when you had players like Andre Barrett making second team all Big East. It is deep this year. You have stars on honorable mention, and you have stars who couldn't even make a team. Look for Alex Caravan to have a chip on his shoulder in this tournament. This is the second year in a row he's been slighted. Last year he got robbed. He should have been rookie of the year. Instead, they gave it to Cam Whitmore, who was injured for half the season. All right, Alex Caravan was rookie of the week every other week. And then Dre Davis, watch him have a chip on his shoulder. He is going to play angry. He's been playing angry, and you've just made him more angry. All right, he's going to be like the Incredible Hulk out there, I have a feeling. So you've just motivated Dre Davis and Alex Caravan. It's a shame Dre Davis didn't win Most Improved Player as well. That went to Xavier's Desmond Claude. But look, you know what? Desmond, I know he was a very poor, inefficient shooter, 21% from three, a volume scorer for a bad team. But he did improve from 4 points a game as a freshman, basically not even a role player, to 16 points and a meaningful player. I see why the coaches gave it to him. But I think when you have a player like Dre Davis, who goes from a role player at Seton Hall, and he was, okay? He was a part-time starter. He was more of a sixth man. When you go from that to the second best player on the team and arguably the team's MVP, that's most improved worthy as well. All right, that's what I've had to say about the awards. Kadari Richmond said it best in his interview with the media. He said, look, man, we're not playing for awards. We're playing to win games. And now Seton Hall, St. John's, part three, let's get it on. For St. John's, okay, they are playing for their tournament lives. They have won five straight games. They have put themselves in position to be in position. Most bracketologists think if they win, this will put them over the top. If they lose, they're likely not in the tournament. This is likely a winner-go-home game for St. John's. Seton Hall, by all metrics, everything indicates that they are in. They are playing for seeding. If they win this game, what I've seen in the tea leaves is that they will probably, likely be a strong 10 seed and avoid Dayton. If they lose this game, they might fall back to an 11 seed, and worse yet, fall back to an 11 seed at Dayton, where you're playing in the first four just to get into the main draw. So Seton Hall's playing for seeding. They're likely in. St. John's is playing to get in. How do they match up? Well, we know that Seton Hall has had the best over St. John's for the better part of a decade and going back 12 to 15 years, okay? But this year, game one, Prudential Center, Seton Hall won 80-65. That was the game with no Rick Pitino, no Jordan Dingle. They were out with COVID. Steve Masiello was in over his head. Seton Hall and St. John's were tied at 24. And if you remember, Seton Hall went on a 28-0 run. 28-0. You don't see that. And that was over the first half and the beginning of the second half. It was a game where Dylan Adeyewusu tore up his former team with 16 points. Seton Hall dominated every aspect of this game and won by 15, should have won by 25. St. John's caught up late. Game two is the game that was at UBS Arena, and I'm sure Rick Pitino regrets trying to spread some love around the tri-state. That game should have been played minimum Carneseca, probably should have been an MSG, but no way should that game have not been played at Carneseca. With that said, St. John's blew a 19-point first-half lead. They were up by 12 at the half, and it was just methodical. Seton Hall chipped away, chipped away, chipped away, took control in the final 5 minutes, and won 68-62. Another utter second-half collapse for St. John's. But what that game is remembered for is Rick Pitino's comments afterward. That was where he publicly lashed out against his team, called out individuals. They had no lateral quickness. They lacked toughness. They're non-athletic. Now, Pitino called it tactical. Pitino tried to say that it was premeditated and he was trying to serve his team a wake-up call. We all know that's a bunch of bullshit. It took him 48 hours to come back after it blew up in the national media. He was being ripped to shreds on every talk show from coast to coast, every columnist from coast to coast. He had been ripping his players all year long in the media. It was this game at this time, at this moment, that the national media picked up on it. Well, guess what? Instead of his team collapsing and not doing anything, they have won five straight games. They have responded to it like no one saw coming. And now St. John's is the team you don't want to play in the Big East tournament. They have not been to the Big East semifinals. St. John's has not been to a Friday night doubleheader at the Garden, at MSG, prime time, in the spotlight in 24 years. Well, guess what? If they don't beat Seton Hall this time, under these circumstances, with all they have going for them, then they don't deserve to go to the NCAA tournament, okay? It's now or never for St. John's, because this group is not coming back next year. They're going to look totally different, and Rick Pitino is going to have to build it back up all over again. So here are my keys for St. John's. Number one, contain Kadari Richmond. Who's going to guard him? Is it Glenn Taylor? Is it RJ Lewis? Is it Naheem Aline? Jordan Dingle? A combination of everybody? I say Taylor starts on him, and then you'll see Lewis in no time. It's a team effort, trust me. Richmond has averaged 15 points and 10 rebounds in the two games. Hasn't shot it all that well, only 36%, but he puts up numbers, and he is the straw that stirs Seton Hall's drink. Number two, rebounding. St. John's got abused on the boards in the first game. It was much closer the second game, but they still lost both rebounding efforts in both games. Seton Hall was plus in both games. You're talking about the two best rebounding teams in the Big East. St. John's is one. Seton Hall is two. The two best offensive rebounding teams in the Big East. So, of course, rebounding is going to be key. Keep Seton Hall off the offensive glass. Keep Jaden Bediako off the offensive glass. Key number three, turnovers. Take care of the ball. They got into trouble in the second game. That's why one of the reasons why they lost that lead. They had 15 turnovers. That is key. And I'm going to give a bonus, number four for St. John's, finish. Play an entire 40 minutes. They haven't done it. They've done it recently, but they haven't done it against Seton Hall. Those are St. John's keys. Now for Seton Hall's. Key number one. All three captains must show up. Richmond, Davis, and Dawes. Dawes, oh, by the way, averaged 20 points in the two games. 21 in the first, 19 in the second. Richmond's going to show up. You know Dre Davis is going to show up. Will Dawes show up? Key number two, win the battle in the paint. Seton Hall won the first game, the battle in the paint. And the second game. As a matter of fact, in the second game, they were 32 to 18 points in the paint. Seton Hall wants to bludgeon you. They want to crash the boards. They want to bang you. They want to get physical. Seton Hall must win the battle in the paint. And number three is defense. Hold St. John's. I'm going to put it at 70. Maybe 74, but the goal is hold them to 70 points or less. The Johnnies are hot. They've won five in a row. They're averaging 88 points a game in those wins. Keep it under 70. Those are the three keys. Now, X factors. St. John's. I wanted to go with Glenn Taylor Jr. or Jordan Dingle. You know Danis Jenkins is going to bring his A game. But I'm going to go with Chris Ledlam. He has been MIA against Seton Hall. MIA against SHU. 7 points in the first game. Even worse in the second game. 2 points and 1 for 6 from the floor. 5 fouls. An embarrassment. He has looked much better of late. I know he's been playing with a sore ankle all year. Chris Ledlam needs to show up because he's going to be matched up against Dre Davis, who's going to be motivated, who is averaging 21 points a game over his last 5 games. Dre Davis has been a beast. Chris Ledlam needs, I'm not going to say win the battle, he needs to slow down Davis and help contain him. Chris Ledlam is my St. John's X factor. My Seton Hall X factor is none other than former Johnny Dylan Adewusu. He's had a roller coaster year for the Pirates. He's had a very poor shooting year. He was a 37% three-point field goal shooter at St. John's, and now he's under 30. However, he's come on of late. He's been working on a shot, and suddenly at the right time of the year, Dylan Adewusu may have found his missing stroke. In his last 3 games, he's averaging 13 points. He's hit 5 3-pointers over his last two, and he is a key. Those are my X factors. Those are my keys for St. John's and Seton Hall. The coaching, that's going to be something to watch as well. Rick Pitino against Shaheen Holloway. Two of the best in the Big East. Two guys who know how to win in the postseason. All right. That is my St. John's Seton Hall matchup. By the way, I do think UConn will win it. I'm not going out on a limb. I like UConn and Creighton in the championship game for the simple fact that they are the two best teams. They are the two deepest teams. They are both playing well. And would I be surprised if another team is there? Sure. It happens. This is college basketball. But I'm picking UConn over Creighton in the championship game. And last but not least, let's get to Ivy Madness. Princeton is the favorite. I would love to see Princeton and Yale in a matchup in the championship game Sunday at Columbia. Princeton has won 3 straight Ivy League regular season titles. First time they've done that since 96, 97, and 98 when, oh, by the way, Mitch Henderson was on this team, their current head coach. It is no surprise that Mitch Henderson has been the first Princeton coach to accomplish that since he was a player. The guy's a winner. He is one of the best coaches in the country that people aren't talking about. He could get a job almost anywhere if he put his hat out there. But I just think he loves Princeton. This is his job. He's staying. Why go anywhere else when you have it this good? Well, they are the favorites. Caden Pierce was just named Ivy League Player of the Week for the 5th time this year. Matt Olako, Xavier Lee, Caden Pierce, Zach Martini, Blake Peters, 5 guys who can hit threes, 5 guys who can score. Their only weakness is center. And Yale, oh, by the way, has one heck of a 7-footer in Danny Wolfe. Yale first has to beat Cornell. That is Princeton's prize for winning the regular season. Yale, if they get by Cornell, and that game's a toss-up, all right? I think Princeton will handle Brown. I know Brown has some shooters, but I think they'll handle Brown, get to the finals. Yale and Cornell, they'll play the winner of that game. If it's Yale, 7-footer, Danny Wolfe is the key. When Yale won, he had 21 points against Princeton. When they lost the second game at Jadwin, Danny Wolfe, 0-for-8, 0 points. So if it's Princeton versus Yale in that final, that's the key. Can Princeton hit their threes? I think they have too much depth. I think they're the favorites. Or can Yale slow them down? Princeton has a bad shooting night, and Danny Wolfe is the MVP of this game. All right. I hope you enjoyed the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, everyone. My thanks to our sponsors, North Jersey Vipers Softball Club and Mike Supa at Ward White Sotheby's Realty. Enjoy the games, everyone. I appreciate you downloading and listening to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Next week, next episode, March Madness, we'll see how many teams from the Tri-State are in the NCAA tournament. Can we get 3? Can we get 4? We shall see. My name is Brian DeNovellis. So long, everyone.